The lawyer for the Waterbury stepmom is on the show now, attorney John Coloitis. Thanks for coming on.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
I want you to know that I'm not a fan of your client, but I understand. Like, I'm not mad at you. There's a lot of anger towards you.
Yes, sir.
I understand that defense attorneys sometimes take tough cases.
Right.
When do we get to hear your client's version of what happened?
Most likely at the time of trial in court, because, I mean, that's the most appropriate place. You know, if anyone's ever going to hear directly from her, it'll most likely be on the witness stand, if at all.
Don't you think that it would take the wind out of the sail of the prosecution if they, if people, potential jurors, heard her version?
Not necessarily. I mean, I think they've heard enough through me to get an idea of where this is going. Any case, you really don't want the accused to speak, if ever. And if they do, it's usually the at trial and sometimes usually the last witness of the trial. So just generally speaking, as a defense attorney, you normally don't want your client out there speaking.
My sense is that she wouldn't be good in front of someone like me or someone in the media.
Oh, I don't think so. I mean, I've talked to her plenty of times. I mean, her story is consistent. She's clear. She's adamant.
Well, why don't you tell us what her story is? What is her story?
Well, I mean, I can tell you the bottom line is, with respect to the specific allegations of whether she committed the crime she's accused of, her story is straightforward. She simply did not do the things she's accused of.
See, that's a big shift in your last interview. Your last interview, you said, my client has done nothing wrong. And I thought that was a bad thing to say, because we all can agree, just looking at this, you know, seeing the story, that she did something wrong. Maybe she didn't do what she was charged with, but she did something wrong by looking the other way, at the very least.
You know, I mean, look, what I'm concerned about is whether the state can prove the criminal charges that have been alleged. That's the only wrong and right I'm concerned about. I'm not too worried about what people may say, you know, if, about other things. What we're focused on is, can the state prove beyond a reasonable doubt each element of the crime they've charged?
And can you bring us through those charges?
Well, I mean, they've charged, I think, assault, kidnapping, unlawful restraint. And, you know, quite frankly, she did not commit those offenses. She never restrained this individual. She's adamant that she did not do that. She did not lock him in a room. She's adamant she did not do these things. So, I mean, it's going to be incumbent upon the state to prove each and every element.
The locks on the doors inside the house. You said that they were there before she bought the house?
That's correct.
And she never used them when he was on the other side of the door?
Not to my knowledge.
Not to your knowledge?
Right. Correct. I mean, we know that's what he has alleged. I mean, and it's going to come out. It's going to depend on him and his ability to testify in front of the jury and convince the jury that those locks were, in fact, engaged, you know, during the time the state claims they were.
The last interview you did, you insinuated, well, no, it was your statement after the victim released a statement. And you kind of insinuated that the victim was lying. And that's going to be your defense?
Correct. What he claims did not occur.
You said something that I thought could be your entire defense, and that she was not the custodial parent. Is that going to be your defense?
I think that plays a role. I think there's been a lot of talk about what happened when he was a child, what happened, you know, in his early years. And with respect to that, it is clear that she was not making the decisions. So to the extent it's relevant what occurred in that home when he was a minor, his father made those decisions.
What about the last year before the fire?
The last year, we don't believe there's any issues. We don't believe there was any restraints used, any preventing from coming, going. There was food in the home. There was access to the food in the home. The refrigerator was stocked. I don't know if those, I don't recall every picture that was released by the Waterbury police, but there was food on the shelves and the cupboards, in the refrigerator. That was all there. There was no locks on any of those doors. There was nothing preventing access to those. So we don't believe there's any issues, in the time period after the father has passed.
He lit a fire that could have taken his life, so he would be rescued.
That's his claim.
You mentioned cross-examination of the victim. Do you see him taking the stand in this trial?
Yeah, I've been referring to him as the accuser. It's up to the jury to decide if he's a victim. But yes, he's the one making the allegations. This case will rise and fall on his ability to convince the jury.
How difficult is that going to be?
They can't prove the case without him.
How difficult is that going to be for you to take a guy who's had this kind of a life and dismantle him in front of a jury?
Every cross-examination is difficult. Every witness provides their own set of challenges, whether it's a police detective that's been on the job for 20 years and testified hundreds of times, or whether it's an expert, a forensic expert, or whether it's a child. As defense attorneys, we have to cross-examine all kinds of people. I've cross-examined children. I've cross-examined women who've alleged horrible things. You approach each one carefully, methodically, and with extensive preparation. Not every cross-examination is a knockdown, drag-out, made-for-TV slugfest. A lot of them are not. So I have no concerns about cross-examining any witness in any case. If you prepare and you take your time and you know what you're doing, you should be able to do it effectively.
Talking to attorney John Coitus, he's the lawyer for the Waterbury stepmom. The weight has become, a big talking point. 68 pounds at 32 years old. How does he get to that weight without her helping that along?
So the problem with the weight is everyone's jumped to the 68 pounds at this age. Weight was an issue and a concern going back to childbirth. There were services provided in the home with respect to feeding when this child was very young. There was concerns about height and weight, and that's reflected in the DCF records and investigation that took place. This child was only 22 pounds at 4 years old. I believe 44 pounds around 8 years old. Those concerns were raised. They were looked into by the Department of Children and Families. It was communicated to the pediatrician at the time, and the records I've seen have indicated that the pediatrician did not raise any alarm and actually signed off and attributed it to picky eating. So the weight was an issue early on, before any alleged abuse is claimed to have taken place. So what I would ask people to do is consider what could be the other issues, could be the other explanations. And I think there's been a rush and an assumption that just because X, then Y. So just because his weight is this, therefore she must have starved him. And that's a huge leap. And it's not enough to say to a jury, oh, look, he's underweight, therefore she must have starved him. There's a lot of dots to connect. I like to say the road from allegations to provable facts is a long one with a lot of twists and turns.
Was he diagnosed with a condition?
I don't know what conditions he was diagnosed with. We don't have access to all the records from that time, but the records I've seen do indicate low weight, do indicate this being checked out by DCF and the doctors, and do indicate them being cleared of any wrongdoing.
Why did she take him out of school when he was 11?
I believe that was a decision the father made, and that's something we will look into further. There are some considerations, but ultimately that's what he chose to do.
And are there any pictures of him, like, as a happy, normal child?
Yes.
Don't you think it would help her case for potential jurors to see these now? Wouldn't it take the wind out of the case?
Nothing's taking the wind out of the sails with the public sentiment that's going. There's no amount of pictures that are going to suddenly get people to say, hey, this didn't happen. And those pictures, it's appropriate to come out at trial. I think what we're trying to do is push back to the extent we can regarding the public sentiment, not necessarily give everyone something new to critique, but remind people of her constitutional rights, remind people that there is a defense coming, ask people to question the allegations and look objectively. And I think there's been a rush to judgment here. For someone to be held in captivity for 20 years and there never to be any physical force used upon that person is mind-blowing. This claim of setting a fire to escape, we will identify and demonstrate a lot of other possibilities, a lot of other reasonable avenues, explanations.
Like what?
Ways to escape. Like the giant window he claims to have looked out every day, and all the people he could have seen in the window. To set a fire seems outrageous. Someone who, by his own words, was out of the room daily. To set a fire seems outrageous.
Did he say he was out of that room every day?
Testimony will come out, yes. I'm not going to get into everything that I've seen regarding the discovery, but what I can tell you is there are a lot of problems with these claims. There's a lot of problems. I don't understand how someone is locked in a room for 20 years and has never had any physical force used upon them whatsoever. Anyone who's raised a child knows you can't keep a 10-year-old constrained in a room for a weekend without some pushback.
This seems like this was something that happened over a long period of time, kind of like a slow burn, kind of like when you put the frog in the pan and you turn the heat up slowly. This seems to me the kind of abuse that takes a long time to just break someone. It seems like this kid's will was broken early in his life.
I don't see that.
Well, it'd be weird if you did right now on the radio.
I don't off the radio either.
You know,
I don't off the radio either.
How many times have you sat down and talked to her, and has her story been consistent?
Her story is consistent every single time. There is zero wavering. There is zero doubt. I think she's going to do fantastic in front of a jury when the time comes.
So you anticipate her getting on the stand?
If necessary. In any criminal case, that's a decision that's often made at the time of trial, whether an accused takes the stand. Sometimes an accuser gets up there and crashes and burns, and they're just simply not credible. And you never need to put the accused on the stand. But that's a decision that anyone accused of a crime makes at the time of trial.
Can you see why people are shocked by this story? I mean, it shook not only the state, but the country and parts of the world.
It's shocking. It's like out of a book or a movie, and sounds like one, right?
Have you been getting a lot of people wanting to make a movie out of this?
There's a lot of interest in the story. Our focus is vindication. Our focus is trial. Our focus is getting a not guilty.
Are you having camera crews record your preparation for trial?
Our focus is going to be on the trial. We're not looking to do anything like that right now. We're really looking to stay focused on winning this case. That's what's most important to us.
When do you think that this would get in front of a jury? How long?
You know, it's hard to tell. Unfortunately, in Connecticut, we do not have dates certain for criminal trials. They kind of get scheduled as the presiding judge feels appropriate or makes time for or gets to. I mean, it's there's a list that it goes on. So there are cases where, depending on the jurisdiction, you can have a trial within, a year of the case. In most instances, in most serious cases, I see a 2, 3, or 4 year delay by the time it gets to trial. I anticipate this case may move a little faster. I anticipate this may go to trial at approximately the 1 year mark, give or take. What I can tell you is the state's attorney's office has been working, I believe, diligently to provide us the discovery in the case. I'm working on getting all that discovery, reviewing it, working with our experts, and preparing our case. It is going to take some time, but we do anticipate moving forward at a fairly good speed.
She has two daughters, correct?
That's correct.
And are they going to be witnesses for you or witnesses for the state?
I anticipate at the appropriate time that if they testify, I believe they will testify, whether the state calls them or whether we call them, we anticipate they will testify in the trial.
Have you spoken with them?
Of course.
And what's their version of events?
So I really can't get into information that's been provided by potential witnesses. I also want to respect their privacy. And I do not represent them, so I really cannot speak for them. So that's all I can tell you about their situation.
When you got the phone call for this case, what was your reaction when you heard the charges? Were you like, what the hell?
No, you know, I think any case that comes in, you know, it sounds interesting. You know, as a criminal defense lawyer, we do like challenging cases. So it did pique my curiosity, and you know, we're always up for a challenge. You know, we're used to people not liking our clients or our position and not really rooting for us, but that's okay.
Do you think it would help you if you're a little bit more sympathetic to the victim and or accuser,
no.
However you want to call them? No?
No.
No.
That's not my job. Listen, the whole world is there to help him. The whole world is sympathetic, supportive, and everything else. My job is to represent Kimberly Sullivan. The rest of the world's turned their back on her. She walked into my office and asked for help. She's telling me she's done nothing wrong. What am I supposed to do?
At the very least, she looked the other way. That would be the very least.
Right.
That's not our concern. Did she commit a crime or did she not commit a crime? This isn't the moral court. This isn't the ethical court. This is a court of law, and did she break the law? And I don't think she did. So, yeah, you know, I understand people would like me to be more sympathetic, but I'm not here to be sympathetic. I'm here to represent this woman. And I know that pisses people off, but at the end of the day, if you're accused of a crime or your family member's accused of a crime, you're going to want, you might not want me. You might think I'm an a-hole. Fine. But you're going to want a defense attorney that's willing to roll up their sleeves and fight for you. Our job is not to tell people they've done a horrible thing or they've done something wrong or they should go out there and say they're sorry. If someone comes to me and says, I didn't do anything, my life is on the line, I need you, we step up and do what we got to do. So, no, I don't feel I need to be more sympathetic.
Yeah, it's weird because when I watch on television, I'm like, man, this guy seems like he's almost mad at this kid who's had this horrible life.
Right.
And like, why wouldn't he just say, yeah, I feel bad for this guy. He had a bad life, but it wasn't on my client.
I don't know that he had a bad life. What I know is...
Come on, man.
What I know is that his allegations, what I know is the statements he's making could potentially land my client in jail for the rest of her life. My job is to defend her. And they're going to come at her with everything. And I'm going to fight back with everything. That's what I was hired to do.
Gotcha.
I people don't hire me to roll over and play dead or to go in there and plead guilty. We roll up our sleeves and we fight. That's what we do.
But wouldn't you want the jury to think that you're human? You know what I mean? I'm like, I see you and I'm like, wow, this guy is just... This is brutal, man.
I had my blood checked. I'm still human. Listen, in front of the jury, in court, there's a certain approach that we take. And I have no problem, you know, I have no problem talking to a jury and conveying our client's case and doing it effectively. And I have no concerns about that. Yeah, things get a little hot sometimes outside the courtroom. Sometimes, you know, we answer the questions as they come.
Right.
But the approach is the approach.
Well, I appreciate you coming on. I hear this is the last one you're doing.
I hope so. Taking a break, but we couldn't say no to you guys.
I'm rooting against you in this particular case.
No problem.
Yeah. All right, thanks.
I appreciate it.
Thanks for coming on.
Thank you very much. Have a great day. All right, bye-bye.
Cleveland is where the urban meets the outdoors, where cultural celebrations meet rabid sports fans meet the symphony, where nobody goes hungry and everybody loves music. Fueled by passion, we are the land for life. From rich history to hidden gems, the Legends of the Land podcast shares the real stories from real Clevelanders that shaped the city. From iconic chefs to grassroots changemakers, sports heroes to creative visionaries, learn why living all out is in Cleveland's DNA. Go to thisiscle.com/podcast.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right.